Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
People have told stories of the strange and supernatural for centuries. Tales of the restless dead return to haunt the living. Whispers of damned souls doing the devil's bidding on earth. Rumors of inhuman things that still hunt the old forests, untouched by the glare of modern life. There may be more to these stories than you could ever imagine. Join us tonight as we delve into the deeper truth inside these mysteries.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bizarre Tales Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Right, this is a listener's story episode, and tonight we are joined by Stephanie Briggs, who's going to tell us about a house that she grew up in which was haunted. Alright, you may hear some reference to Coronation Street at the end of the episode, and that's due to Stephanie's father being Johnny Briggs, who played Mike Baldwin in Coronation Street, which is a British soap. For those who don't know, most people will be familiar with him. So that's why you'll hear the Knicker Factory mentioned at the end. So yeah. And if you've got a paranormal story you'd like to share on the show, then please do. Contact us at supernaturalpod@gmail.com or check the links in the description for other ways to contact us. But obviously there's Facebook and stuff like that, you know the drill. Right, without further ado then, let's get into Stephanie's story. So she's going to tell us about the haunted house she grew up in.
Yeah, so I guess the house was it was built in the 1920s, so currently around 100 years old, so not actually that old. At all by our standards of things, because my mum's current house is 500 years old and there's nothing, well, none of us have really experienced anything weird in her house there, but this house was really weird. So it's not far from Clent Hills, near Dudley in the West Midlands. And so the house itself is like a double fronted family home. And there was like always people there. It was always full of energy and fun, but there was this one side of the house that was always cold. Like, we couldn't ever keep it heated. My cousins used to call it the Christmas room because we'd only use it on like high days and holidays, because it was just not, it just didn't have a nice feel to it. It was kind of, it was difficult to heat. It felt just a bit dark and cold, and most of the house, but especially this side of the house, it felt like you were being watched a lot. Like the room above it was my brother's room, my older brother's room. But my sister is older than him. And when she came home from the hospital, that was the largest room that wasn't like the master bedroom. So my mum and dad wanted to put my sister in that bedroom. It was like to the left of the house. above the Christmas room. And apparently my sister wouldn't ever settle in that room at all. Like, she would cry, she'd be really fractious. She just was really difficult when they tried to make that be the baby's nursery. And so they had to just put her in a different room because she refused to settle in that room at all. And then my brother had it. And yeah, just all that side of the house was always a bit cold. But yeah, there was loads of weird things, like a lot of the typical things, like taps would be like the faucet would be fully open sometimes. Like, you'd come home and like the taps would be like running, like really like, and not as though they'd just been left on a drip, because they were the kind of taps, you know, like in the 90s where you had to really twist the handle. Yeah. And they'd be like fully wrenched around to the one side. And then obviously, so I'm like one of four kids. I'm number three. And like, so my parents would always blame us and just think that we weren't owning up to it because we didn't want to get, you know, told off for, you know, wasting water or whatever. But honestly, stuff like that would happen. We had in the kitchen, lights would explode. We couldn't ever keep the bulbs on. Not every time, but so many times a week you turn the lights on, and they were sort of quite big spotlights. And yeah, there'd always be one or two blown in the kitchen, and we'd always be replacing those. What else? Oh yeah, often I would hear my mum calling me, and she wouldn't be in the house. And she, because the way she called my name, there was a certain inflection. She would always go up at the end, and I'd hear it quite a lot. And I'd like call out and say, yes, what do you want? And then I'd get more and more frustrated to the point where then I'd go looking for her. And then I'd like find her in the garden or whatever and be like, you know, what do you want? Like, what, why do you keep calling? And she'd be like, I haven't in any way, like, you know, that would happen frequently. And then another thing that would happen is we'd be sitting in, like, there was a kid's playroom that we would sit in next to the kitchen and like watch telly, or just that was the room that we were allowed to destroy. And it was right next to the kitchen, and the kitchen had a stable door with one of those little, like a window, an internal window, so you could see through. And when you were watching telly, people always talk about shadow people, and I always thought that I had seen shadow people, but actually what we saw was different. We would see in the corner of our eye, like dark shadows flickering about in the kitchen, moving, but like darting really quickly at full pelt. And often you just, you know, often you'll see stuff or you'll experience stuff, but you're not fully focusing on it. And it's only then that you're like, oh, that was weird. But in the moment, you sort of just kind of accept it. So we'd be doing that. We'd be watching telly and we'd see these flickering lights. And then you'd see my siblings sort of turn to look into the kitchen, and there'd be nothing going on, no one in there. Sometimes even the lights would be off because you could see brightness and then a dark thing moving, or like it was lighter. And that was one thing that like was kind of creepy. And we all saw, like we all experienced it. But we never, ever did that thing where we were like, can you see something? Like, we just accepted that it was there. And only since we sold the house, we'd be like, do you remember when that happened? And then, yeah, so we all saw it, but it wasn't really like this big thing that we spoke about. It was just living in the house. These were just things that we got used to. And also the main hall was pretty daunting. Like, it was quite intimidating. I used to do that thing, you know, when you're frightened of being in the dark. It was like this yawning darkness, the hall and the stairs. And my room was the first one at the top of the stairs. So I always felt a bit exposed and like I'd be the first one. I don't know. It was just, anyway. So what I used to do was I'd turn the lights on and then run up the stairs, turn the landing light on. And then I'd have to come downstairs and turn the hall light off, because that's how scary this room was to me. In fact, and you may not want to keep this in, when I was a kid, I used to be too scared to go to the loo in the night, and I'd open the door and sometimes I'd be so frightened, I'd just go for a tinkle on the carpet. And then I would like piddle on the floor. And my mum eventually was like, "What is going on?" And then I had to tell her I was too frightened to leave my room. But yeah, so do you want me to tell you the first story, or do you want me to tell you the one about the priest man that I?
Yeah, why not? Fire away. Yeah.
Okay, so I've never had what's it called? Sleep paralysis, I don't think. But this wasn't that. I was asleep as a kid. And I'm not entirely convinced it was my eyes playing tricks on me, but I'll just tell you what I saw. So I was asleep one night and I started to wake up. And as I woke up, I saw my eyes were sort of fixed on something in front of me. And I was trying to make out what I was looking at as I was waking up. And as I was waking up, I saw this person standing at the end of my bed. And they were wearing almost like, you know what you saw, what Friar Tuck wears in Robin Hood, like kind of a monk's habit.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, standing at the end of my bed. And I remember not really feeling anything because I was trying to work out what I thought I saw. And then when I realized I thought I was seeing this man or this monk or whatever, I kind of didn't know what to do. And I remember everything felt really, really still. Like everything just, it was weird. Like the atmosphere felt weird. And I looked at this thing for a period of time. And then I don't really, it just kind of dissipated. It just kind of wasn't there again anymore. Like it didn't vanish quickly. It just sort of, this thing was there and then it wasn't. And I remember being in bed and then being terrified and being too frightened to pull my covers back to run to my mum to like get help, which was useless anyway, because she just brought me straight back to bed and left the light on. And then I pulled the duvet over my head. And again, I was convinced that I could feel the duvet moving, but that just could have been a frightened kid imagining things. So I will say, because I'm not sort of like everything was haunted, but then I try and be as skeptical as possible. So that one I'm not 100% on. But the one I really...
Just on that, before you go on, I just wanted to know, because obviously you say this figure had this hood on and, you know, looked more or less like a monk. But, you know, me and Dan had like a running joke about that, you know, our county series, that every county we go to, there's a nun or a monk. And I just was interested, though, because I'm sort of formulating a bit of a theory about this monk thing now. But
go on.
Did you see a face?
Mm-mm. No, so I think he had his back to me, because also at the end of my bed there was a like a chest of drawers with a telly on it, and above the telly was a mirror, and if I looked into the mirror I could see out my bedroom door. So that would be a way of like, when I was frightened, I'd look into the mirror to see if I could see if there was anyone in the hall or on the landing. And I remember trying to look into the mirror to see if I could see a face, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So from my memory of it, the back was to me. And I remember lying there trying to sort of be able to see if I could see if I was being looked at through the mirror as well. But yeah, I get what you say about this whole like monk thing. There was, I think I told you, like there was later in the local newspaper, there was a story about it was like a priestly procession. Where I lived, it used to be called the Dingle, so it must have been like this place where there was. Sorry about my baby. I'll just wait. Yeah, so this place where I grew up used to be called the Dingle. So I was on Dingle Road, and then just down the road was this was Rectory Road, and there's an old rectory there, like an old church. And in the newspaper, and again, I don't know how, I can't attest to how truthful this is or how much it was based on fact, but this article, I remember my mum cut it out of the paper and gave it to me. There was a procession of priests, and I don't know what it was for, maybe Easter or I don't know, but they would come down through the Dingle and they would go down to Rectory Road and into chapel and then do their mass or their penance or whatever. And in this newspaper article, there was these stories about local residents where they would have sort of stories about priests as well. I definitely saw that newspaper after I had seen the person at the end of my bed, because my mum wouldn't have cut it out for me otherwise.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that's interesting. But I guess like historically, people were a lot more holy, weren't they? Weren't they like forced to go to church on a Sunday?
Well, I wouldn't say forced, but yeah, I think it was. But it just seems to be quite a high number of monks to use that. And again, we're just talking about someone in, like saying, like in a habit or a robe or this kind of thing. And there is in other cultures a very similar entity seen with this robe and all the rest of it. And I'm just wondering if what we're actually seeing is another form of shadow man, because you probably come across like people see shadow man with a hat on. And obviously that's talked about in ancient cultures as well. Obviously the jinn being an example. So I'm just wondering if this monk thing is a monk, if it was happening somewhere like in church ground or, you know, that sort of thing, or there was a reason, because I obviously some houses in Britain we see monks and then they have a priest hole and stuff like that. sort of makes sense, but I'm just wondering, I don't know, if there's more to this monk thing than I think we just see it and just it's a monk. But you know, would they have gone round with a hood up all the time? And why were the monks come back? You know, as like you said, these are supposed to be the holy people. You know, surely they're in a better place, not just anyway. Carry on.
I hadn't really considered that, but you're right. It does seem. I just assume because like historically England and I guess like the British Isles, I guess were like that. Religion's been a massive thing, hasn't it? Just wait for her to stop crying. So yeah, religion's been and wouldn't like the second son tend to go off and be a priest or something? Is that? I just feel like it was much more of a thing historically. So yeah. Maybe that's why. But I hadn't really considered your idea. I love it though. It's great. It's a great idea.
It just seems to be a little bit, like I say, just a little bit too frequent for.
Yeah, and there's me saying I never saw a shadow man, and maybe I have.
Yeah, okay. Could be. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that idea of the it being our example, because people do say the jinn, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the hat man, but I only ever hear that from American stories. I think the hat man story.
Well, the Quran and the ancient tales, you know, from Arabia, and that they talk about the jinn and they talk about wearing a hat, and the legend is if you could remove its hat, you'd be granted a wish, and that's where we get the genie.
Wow.
You know, in our culture sort of idea from. Yeah, so if you could knock its hat off. So it was wearing a hat.
Wow.
Again, they call it smokeless fire, which, you know, could be a shadow, or it could be more like, I always think when they talk about smokeless fire, they're talking about smoke without a fire, which would literally be smokeless fire, which would be like a dark mass, or they're talking about more like, do you remember the film Predator? You know,
mirage thing,
that sort of thing. They're talking about that. You know, it's difficult because obviously you can't write. It's difficult to write that down in them days. You know what I mean? Nowadays they'd say, "Well, it looked like Predator," or you know, there should be some reference, wouldn't there? But smokeless fire. But yeah, I don't know. I just think, and again, does it present itself? Do these things present themselves in different ways to different people? You know, you've got that coming in. We've got the druids as well, which probably wore those types of thing. I know there's a forest in America where there's stone monument, is what we want to call them, that they're like not really like little dwelling things, and they reckon some sort of druid people built those, and they see lots of shadow people in that area, and so they sort of put the two together. So maybe it's something to do with the druids and what they was doing.
Maybe. I mean, there is an Iron Age hill fort very close by, on Witchbury Hill, Which, so yeah, possibly. Yes,
probably means that people have lived there for a long time. So,
wow.
Who knows? So, but just before you go to your next story, I just wanted to go back to the, you know, the corner of your eye thing, because you know, a lot of people will say, all right, you had flickering lights, this could be electrical, you had this thing like a corner of your eye, this could be just your imagination. But what people tend to forget, and I did a little bit on this, now I'll probably get it the wrong way around now, but a lot of people will accept that an animal can see something that we can't.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll say, oh, my cat or my dog watched this thing go across the room and then it started growling or whatever. That's sort of accepted, you know, not scientifically maybe, but most people were, you know, that's fairly common sort of belief. Well, the issue with our eye is that obviously our eye, not obviously, but our eye is made up of cones and rods. So I think it's the center part, which deals with the color more than the outer part. So that'll be the cones, and then the rods will be on the outer side. So if you imagine the eye, if you imagine where the iris is, that's cones, and then the outside's rods. So the makeup of our eye is different to that of a dog, say a dog's eye is predominantly rods, right? No cones. So when it's got the ability to see these things and it can follow them with its eyes, obviously with us, if we was to see that same thing that it was seeing, we'd have to use the periphery because that's where our rods are. So I actually think it gives more credence, because skeptics will say, well, you saw it out the corner of your eyes, you know, it don't exist. I would say it gives more credence that you can only see it out the corner of your eye.
Right.
Because that's where your eye, the rods in your eyes are. If you could see it in the front, you know, obviously then that's something different. But if you could see it, because I mean, I've had the same thing exactly how you described. I can sit here and I can see these things dart back and forth in the kitchen, you know, and I can have other people here and I'll see people turn their heads to look.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so I know they've seen it as well. And I've spoke to people that have been here and I say, just tell me when you see it. And they'll go, yeah, we can see it and I can see it. So, but again, if you turn to look at it, you won't see it.
There's nothing there.
I think there's something going on with the way our eyes made up, maybe is, you know, helping with that situation.
But, gosh, you know. That's pretty, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I'm looking, rods, you say?
Yeah, cones and rods. It's You see, that way around, I just said, oh, it's the other way around, but whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was wondering whether it was something to do with, I was listening, because I don't have any time to read at the minute, I just listen to audiobooks. And I was listening to this audiobook about, it's called What the Dead Are Dying to Teach Us by Claire Broad. And I was just listening to the introduction and she's talking about brainwaves and how kids they operate on the brainwaves that adults use when they're sleeping or meditating. And it's only until they're sort of, I think she said like 7 or something onwards, then they start using a different brainwave and stuff. But I think it's kind of interesting as well that as kids we would see it, but as an adult, I haven't seen that since. And I don't know whether it's because it made me think, oh, is that because like we were kids and we were operating on a different, our brains were working on a different level and we were more open and receptive. Sorry about the baby. Or I was thinking, is it that I'm just in a different place where there's nothing weird going on? So I hadn't really thought about like actually how your eyes are made up and the fact that, because we can only see a certain spectrum as well. Apparently there's like much more of a spectrum that we just, our eyes can't.
Yeah, yeah. I think we only see 0.5% of the visible light spectrum. So we're practically blind. So, but again, that's just a human thing, isn't it? We think we're superior. We think we're this, don't we? But,
well, of course, yeah.
But yeah, did you have something else to?
So yeah, the main experience I had in that house was, I was around 12, I think. And so I think it was probably Christmas 1994, around there. As I said, you'd go up the stairs, there'd be like a small half landing and then like 3 more steps. And then my room was the first one at the top. And it was Christmas. So my grandma had been given the job of sitting on the landing. And just basically making sure that no one went downstairs because my parents were wrapping gifts and getting everything ready and all of that sort of stuff. So, and I was really excited. So I kept trying to find reasons to leave my room, and my nan was getting more and more like irritated with me. And so I remember coming in and getting into bed again. And I had like a plastic decoration on the door, on my bedroom door. And it fell off. And I remember calling my grandma to see if she would put it on the, back on the door for me. But she was irritated with me. So she just picked it up and like put it on a chair and left again. Sorry. Shall I put her down?
Whatever's easiest for you.
Is it ruining your audio?
No,
is
no.
It? Are you sure?
I could just edit that out, so it's no big deal.
Okay. So I'm trying to like minimize the amount of work you have to do.
Nah, no.
So she comes in and she puts the decoration down on the chair and leaves. And then so I was lying in bed and I knew she was getting like mad at me by this point, so I didn't want to get out. So I was calling her name and looking at the door, waiting for her to come in. But instead, this woman walks into my room and she's got a long black skirt on and she had a shawl on, but I can't remember now whether that was over her head or I don't remember seeing her face, but she came on. She didn't ever face me. She just walked in and then stood really still facing the wall. And she stood there for a bit and my brain didn't jump to ghost. My brain thought it was my grandma. And then I was like, what is she doing? Yeah. And then I realized that she was wearing like weird clothes. So I thought, has she like got dressed up and is she trying to weird me out into like being quiet and going to sleep? She tried to like unnerve me into being quiet because she was a bit, she was quite naughty. She'd do silly things like to embarrass us or to freak us out. Once my brother drank some her drink and he told her that it had lots of pills in and if he drank it, his willy would fall off. She would do stuff like that and freak us out. So it wasn't beyond what I thought she'd be able to do. So I just sort of was watching her and was sort of thinking, what is she doing? And she walked in, this lady, and she stood there and faced the front. And then after maybe 15 seconds or so, but that felt quite long because I remember trying to process what was going on. And she walked in and she just stands there and then she just turns around again and leaves my room. And I was still going, what was her thought process there? Like trying to work out like what her intention was. And then eventually I got out of bed again and I went onto the landing and she was lying. She was wearing like a white jumpsuit thing, like a tracksuit bottom. Well, it was like the early 90s. So yeah, this sort of like thing. But it, obviously she wasn't wearing black. She was wearing a dress. She was wearing like a white jumpsuit. She was kind of a sexy grandma. And but she was asleep. And I remember saying like, what was that? Or what were you doing? Or like, what? And she woke up and then that was that point where she was like, go to bed. And if you do not go to bed right now and stop this, you won't get anything in the morning. Like that'll be it. Christmas will be cancelled for you. And it was at that point where I was like, oh, okay. And then I just lay there processing what I thought I'd seen. And like, I definitely wasn't asleep. So with the man at the end of my bed, like I accept that I was waking up and it could have been my eyes focusing and seeing something that wasn't there, but I was wide awake at this point. Mm. I was too excited to sleep. I didn't for a minute think that like it was a ghost coming into my room. I thought it was a human being, like it was solid.
Do you have to pick up any details of?
Not that I remember so much now. I just remember like a long black skirt, like a long, maybe like a woolen skirt, like a long black to the floor. And I don't, from my memory, like if I had to give you an age, maybe 50s onwards, maybe. Like, she was an older woman, not elderly, but she was an older lady. Not particularly rich. Yeah, it was like a long woolen skirt and then like a shawl, you know, like kind of a knitted shawl that they tend to have like tassels and the holes in them. But I don't know whether that was just up to her shoulders or whether she had it over her head. I think I remember her hair being up in a bun, but I don't know whether that is because I remember seeing it through her shawl, because I remember it being a dark colour and there was sort of like, not holes as in it was old and tatty and like a ratty shawl, but it was like a crochet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, her hair up, quite neat, very still, very, very sort of upright. But again, that house was 1920s. So the other typical thing, I think, is like the, it's a Victorian woman. Everyone's in Victorian dress. And the other thing is they're either in black or in white or grey, right? I don't know what colour she was wearing because my room was dark and the light was on outside, like in the hall and the land, not the landing, but the hall. So, but I know it was a dark colour. It could have been brown or black or blue or whatever. But yeah, all the way to the floor and then a shawl and then maybe hair in a bun and maybe 50s to 65-ish around there. But I don't remember anything too much about features. And I think that's because I just had accepted she was my grandma, so I wasn't trying to work out what her face looks like, if that makes sense.
We've got now 2 minutes before Zoom packs up. So I suppose the question would be, really, if you had the opportunity to go back to that house to live, I mean, would you?
Yeah, I mean, I dream about it all the time. And I loved that house, even though it was scary. And it felt threatening, but it was my home and I grew up there and I loved it. And even though it was scary, it was my security as a kid and I had loads of really happy memories there. So, yeah. And I miss, like, people from the Midlands are great. I miss the fellow Midlanders. So, yeah, I'd definitely go back. Although I couldn't afford it now. It's way too expensive.
Yeah, I saw it really. It was a bit pricey, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I own half a car, that's it.
It's a beautiful house, so I can understand it. So
that was when I was 12. And then I told my mum a few days later, and then she said to me, oh, that's interesting. And I said, what? And she told me the story about my sister when I think my sister was about 3 or 4, and she was in the kitchen and she wasn't allowed to touch the hot water, but she wanted to make my mum a cup of tea. So she was allowed to put the chair at the counter and get the cup and put the bag in the mug and wait. And the kettle had boiled. So she was calling my mum. This would have been in the early 80s. And so she runs into the hallway and is calling up the stairs because my mum was upstairs. She's calling her. And then when my mum came down the stairs to, help her out, she was kind of looking at something on the stairs, and my mum was at the top, and she looked sort of like she was confused or trying to process something. So my mum asked her what the matter was, and apparently she asked my mum who the lady was, like, who that lady, mama? My mum was like, there was just the two of them in the house. And obviously she was really weirded out by it and was like, no, there's no one. It's just you and me. And like, but my mum found it interesting that I'd said, oh, I saw this woman. And I didn't know this story about my sister at all.
But your mum never saw anything.
No, but she did say she had an experience. So I'm one of four, and I don't know if it was either my eldest sister or my brother or me. It definitely wasn't my younger brother. But she'd had one of us, and she was lying in bed one night. My dad worked in Manchester, so he would be away for, like, the week, and then he'd normally come home on weekends and then go back to Manchester. And we were in the Midlands, so she was in this house on her own with her kids, and she said her experience was she was lying in bed asleep And she woke up, you know, that falling feeling you get when you're going too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, she got that in reverse. And she said she was jolted awake. And her experience was that she was convinced someone had broken into the house and they were under her bed. And she said it was as though they'd got their arms and their feet and they'd shunted the mattress from underneath the bed. Because my mum said she woke up like rolling onto her side, like almost. And she said she woke up and she was trying to work out whether she'd done that in her sleep or what was going on. And then she said, as she was sort of awake at this point, she just been, and there was a bassinet next to her with a baby. And I know there was, I think she had at least one or two other babies in the house or children. And she said the mattress got shunted a second time. And she said she like put her hand over her mouth because she wanted to scream. And yeah. She just lay there being like, what am I going to do? There's a man in the house and like, I've got kids and I'm on my own. And she said she lay there for what felt like an eternity and eventually got up and looked under the bed, but there was nobody there.
Yeah. That's a very distinct feeling, isn't it? To be lifted up from, I mean, I remember being on bunk beds, you know, when I was a kid, and I remember my brother underneath, like doing the same thing with his feet, yeah. like pushing me up. And...
Exactly. It's that feeling you're literally being like forced. Yeah.
It's pretty unnerving when you know just falling asleep, I must admit.
Yeah. And then so I said to her, did you tell anyone? And she said, I don't know if she said no or if she said yes and she got like dismissed. But I remember her saying, I think she said she didn't say anything because she expected that someone would say, or the doctor would say, or whoever she spoke to would just be like, oh, you're a new mum. You've just had a baby. Your hormones are all over the place.
So
your sleep's
interrupted. You'll see ghosts.
Yeah. So she was like, so I didn't say anything to anyone because I just felt like I'd be laughed at and I didn't really feel like that was a fight I was willing to fight. But she honestly, she swears blind that that happened to her. And she said, yeah, if it was just the one sort of shunt, then she...
You could dismiss it, but two is...
But it was the second one, yeah. So, yeah, that was my mum's experience.
I like how she laid there thinking that the bagel was just going to leave at some point. Yeah.
I'll just stay very still and hope.
It's funny, it's funny what we do, isn't it, in times of, you know, horror and stuff, but...
Just play dead.
Yeah.
That's basically what she did. But and there was this other experience I had as well in that house. So my room was above the kitchen and we had like those little square terracotta floor tiles. I don't know if you remember
them. Yeah, I remember them.
In the kitchen. And I would start waking up and I would hear the sound of high heels clip-clopping around the kitchen floor and not really walking with any intention. It was just sort of like clip-clop, like just gentle steps as if someone was just pottering around downstairs. And then I'd hear the sound of a glass being put down on the countertop and moved about a bit and then the heels and clip-clop. And sometimes I'd hear it and just think it was my parents, but sometimes I would be like, it's really late at night, so I would get up and go downstairs and there'd be nobody in the kitchen. Sorry about my phone. Yeah, there'd be no one down there. And the strange thing about that is I would go downstairs, but whenever people talk about stuff like this, they will say, oh, like my dog was, like the hackles were up and they were all upset and stuff. But like often my dog would be asleep, like she'd just be sleeping in her bed, not bothered by it. And yet it would be enough to wake me and for me to sit there listening to it for a bit and then for me to get out of bed and come downstairs and there'd be nothing. And I remember telling my family about that and they laughed at me and said, oh, it's probably your grandma come around for a gin and tonic. and that they would like laugh it off like that and just basically say, oh, because she liked to drink. She's like coming and raiding our cupboards sort of thing. Until once my dad heard it, and he went down with a golf club. And again, there was no one in the kitchen. And then he felt like a right tick because he's sort of standing there in his pants and vest with a golf club. There's no one in the house. And then only at that point was he like, okay, yeah, I've heard it. Like, and then the like sort of mockery stopped a bit in terms of that. But that was, that was quite interesting. But what I find weird about that is that, yeah, the dog, she was just like, often, sometimes she'd be awake, but maybe she had me coming downstairs. I don't know, but she wasn't in any way upset or like freaked out or being like, I don't know. So that I always thought was quite interesting. The last thing I can tell you about that house is there was like my parents' bedroom, there was like a long corridor, and then their room was at the end of the corridor. And there was the door, the way it was on the hinges was it was weighted. So if for any reason the door clipped out of its sort of shut position, the weight of the door would make sure that the door would swing open. Like you couldn't just have it at a crack. Like it was either open or shut door because of the way it was hung on its hinges. And so my dad, he said, like, sometimes he'd be asleep in bed and it would be in the middle of the night and he'd hear the door unclick from its hinged position. And then because of the door being the way it was, it would swing open. And he said, I swear to you, there were times when I was convinced there was somebody standing on the threshold of that doorway, like not coming into the room, but he was like, the amount of times, like I would hear that sometimes and I would wake up and the door would swing open and I'd have this like feeling of being watched. And he said sometimes he would get up because he'd think it would be one of us, like we'd had a dream or something, but he never came across anyone. And like you'd say to him, do you believe in ghosts? And he'd say, absolutely not, don't be ridiculous. And then you'd say, is this house haunted? And he'd be like, oh crumbs, yeah. Yeah. Like, you don't believe in ghosts. You'd be like, nah, it's not my thing. But that house, it was a weird place. It really was.
That's a typical British sort of thing, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
You can hold those two things in your head at the same time, and you know, that makes sense to you, you know what I mean? And we all do it, don't we? I think.
Yeah. Well, he was born in 1935 as well, my dad. So he was definitely kind of his generation. So yeah, it wasn't okay, especially for like the man of the house to be like
worried,
ghosts. Yeah. So he was like, oh no.
But all parents will know that feeling of when you're just asleep and then you're just awake and there's a kid standing in the doorway and you just know, you know, someone's got up for a wee or whatever. But, you know, I don't know if you hear him approaching. I don't know. I just don't know what it is, but and you just instinctively, you're just there. And you would think like waking up and seeing someone stood in the doorway would be like, you make you like be a bit, you know, be a bit shocked at that, but you're not. It's like you just instinctively know it's your kid, don't you? So to wake up and have that feeling of someone watching you, like someone should be stood there, not having someone stood there.
Yeah,
that's a funny feeling.
Yeah, he would never, like as I said, like he wouldn't ever like elaborate or expand on anything. He'd just be really matter of fact about what he saw or felt or heard. And then you'd say, well, do you think it was a ghost? And he'd be like, no, don't be ridiculous. You'd be like, is this house haunted? And he'd be like, yeah. Yes, it is. Enough. But that wasn't a ghost. That was just like the house settling, or that was, you know,
You find a way to explain it away. But you said you had some interesting thing to do with Hampton Courts. I know we covered it in
episode. So Hampton... Yeah, Hampton Court Palace. I had like one weird thing that happened there. When was this? This was probably like 2008, something like that, I think. I started seeing this guy and he lived, so I live in London at the moment and he was living in Reigate, which is kind of a bit further out. So whenever we arrange to do something, we try and do something like fun that was kind of not in London, because also I felt like it wasn't really very fair expecting this person to constantly come into London to hang out with me. So we decided this one day we'd go to Hampton Court Palace. And we hadn't been dating long, so we were kind of doing, you know, and you almost behave like teenagers because you're like sort of seeing how, like, testing their boundaries as well, and like seeing how like straight they are or how much fun you can have with this person. So we were at Hampton Court Palace. And I was frustrated at the fact that many of the rooms are like shut off to everybody. You can't go into a lot of the rooms. And like, I really wanted to explore. And yeah, I wanted to see the bedrooms and the wanted gallery and all of that kind of stuff. But I also wanted to see like the actual Hampton Court, right? So yeah, there'd be locked doors and I'd be trying to, like, people would leave the room and then I'd try and open it and like just not go in, but like peep around or look through a keyhole, that kind of stuff. We were messing around, and so we were in one of these rooms. It was at the bit, I think we'd come through the long gallery, and then there's this bit where you go through all of these different bedrooms. It's like one big hall basically, and like you have to go into a bedroom to then come into the next room and the next room. And we were going down these bedrooms, and I promised this time neither of us were doing anything wrong. But everyone had left the room, and because we'd sort of, there was a guide just in front of us, but we weren't really part of the tour. We were just sort of going around by ourselves. And you know how they have the rope that ropes everything off when you're not allowed to go into the space? So
yep,
we were kind of on not even touching the rope. And then as soon as everyone left the room, this alarm went off in the room that we were in, and there was only the two of us in this room at the time. Basically, if you go too far into the room, there's obviously a sensor or something that like alerts the people that work there so they can come and like address what's going on. And so this woman had seen that we were being a bit silly, but she was taking it in good humor, and then she leaves the room, this tour guide, and then the alarm goes off, so she assumes it's us. She comes back in, and we were like, I promise we weren't doing anything, honestly, we weren't even touching the rope, let alone like being the wrong side of it, I'm sorry. And she was like, don't worry about it, these things sometimes happen, whatever. So that was fine. And then we went into the next room, and it happened again. And the alarm in that room went off, and we'd been in that room. And by this point, she was kind of a bit like, what? So we said, I promise you, I know it looks like we actually were, because we were just in that room and it happened then. But I promise you it wasn't. And she said something like, oh, don't worry about it. It's just been one of those days today. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, oh, well, we have... Every now and then there are certain days when things just seem to go a bit weird. And I said, oh, has something else happened? And she said, yeah, we've been smelling oranges today quite a lot, scent of oranges. And there was some story about they believed that if you could smell oranges, it was one of the ghosts of the women who lived there at one point. And they said they'd... the other people in the tour had been smelling oranges, and there'd been other things that had been happening at Hampton Court that day. So, yeah, we sort of were a bit unnerved by that, but found it exciting nonetheless. But I've been back a number of times since, and nothing like that's happened again.
Mm.
But it was interesting that we were being silly, and it was almost as though then. As if Hampton Court Palace didn't want us in the room by ourselves. It was like, come and get these people and take them away, that sort of thing. And then the fact that they'd been smelling this sort of perfume or oranges, or the odour of orange oil or something, was quite interesting. But it'd be pretty interesting. Whenever I go to places like that, I also say, like, are there any stories or have you had any experiences? And more often than not, they tend to tell you something. Nothing had ever happened to me, and then the people who sort of are in charge to be like, oh, don't worry, it's just one of a number of things that's happened today that's been a bit strange. So
you'd think that it would happen fairly regular in a place with so much history. So It's interesting that you say that you felt like it was, you know, saying like, come and remove these people type thing.
Cause, get these people out.
Because he's messing about. Maybe because it was quite an orderly place, you know, back in the day. Maybe the spirits did.
Yeah. And I think as well, like the people, because obviously it was royalty or people with like high status. Yeah. And so to be in their bedroom, like that is a really intimate thing, wasn't it? Like there wasn't really, like people didn't go into their bedrooms other than their chambermaids, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what the four-poster bed was invented for, wasn't it? So you could put the curtain around while you're doing your business. So
yeah.
I don't know. Intimate.
But I feel like, yeah, I think like trusted people would be in their bedchamber, yeah. But not like people
not
like
commoners.
Me.
Not commoners, no.
Exactly, yeah. So that was pretty. Yeah, it was fun. It was exciting. They do. I think they do like Halloween evenings, which I think would be quite good fun.
Mm.
But far away, it's a bit far.
Probably do ghost things there now and all that, because I think a lot of these places are sort of seeing a market in that area for those types of events now, aren't they? So
yeah. Did you see the video online of the guy at Hampton Court Palace with the I think you did. You were looking at the video on your podcast, weren't you?
Yeah.
Watching the
guy that opens the fire doors. The doors. It looks like fire doors to me. Yeah.
Yeah. I was with my mate the other day. Well, a couple, she loves Tudor history. She's American. And we were walking around and she said, we were on the inside and she said, that's the doors from the inside that were flung open.
Yeah.
And they're like modern fire doors. So yeah.
It did look like fire doors to me in the video. Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, the guy was dressed very strange to me. He looked more like a pirate.
Yeah.
Sort of get up then, you know, what you'd think of as like that era. So,
yeah. And I think she said when that was built, or when Cardinal Wolsey built it, that was a wall. It wasn't a fire exit. Like that had been put in. It wasn't like there'd always been a door there and it just happened to be a fire. They changed it to fire doors. Like it used to be a brick wall. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that one.
90% sure it's an hoax.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I'll just leave 10% there. But I don't know. Just the outfit. It's just like someone was like saying, "Oh, I'm going to do a prank and I'm going to get like a medieval outfit," and then they come back dressed as a pirate. But that's all they had. Well, I suppose it could have been worse. It could have been dressed as Chewbacca or something.
What did Cardinal Wolsey wear? Because he probably was he a priest.
I don't know. You'd want Dan for that. Dan, I tell you. Yeah.
Because he owned the house. I think he was a priest. He built the place and then he was going to lose his life. And then I can't remember why he'd vexed Henry. But then he gave it to Henry VIII as a gift to try and... Because I think he was kind of a bit annoyed that he felt that this sort of person had a house that he thought was almost better than his. So he was annoyed about it. I think he lost his head anyway, Cardinal Wolsey, but maybe he dressed like that. And that's why they were like, let's dress as a monk, as you say.
I mean, he didn't fancy fire doors.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It's a good clip, isn't it? But I did put it on the Facebook group actually at one point, but yeah, I'm not convinced. I'm sure that the place is haunted, like, but yeah, I'm not sure about that clip.
I was listening to a podcast about Hampton Court Palace, and I think the office now, that their like main office that the people work in, was someone's bedroom, I can't remember. And there's lots of weird stuff that happens in that office, but obviously it's closed off to the public. And I feel like whenever I go there, I always leave. And it's amazing. I'm not saying it's not amazing. But when I leave, I'm like, it always feels quite small. And then when you hear people talking on podcasts, there's like thousands of rooms. But we don't get to see any of them. And that's why I was trying to peek behind doors and open locked cupboards. And, you know, like the panelling. If there was no one in the room, I'd just pull the panelling back and see if there was something behind there. Just wanted to, like, know more, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that is why they have the ropes there, isn't it? Because people can't be trusted, yeah. But yeah, that, I mean, like I say, interesting again that, you know, all these things took place in apart from the Hampton Court stuff, all took place in one house. It's not something that, you know, you moved to a different place and it didn't carry on, and obviously the rest of your family have moved about and they're not experiencing anything. So it does seem like the house was the epicenter of it all, which is, that's kind of what you'd expect, you know what I mean? I know a lot of people think people can be haunted, and I think they can. But with those types of things, what you was hearing, the residual stuff, you know, people walking up and down the kitchen and glasses
on the counter. And
seems to be, you know, tethered to that house, doesn't it? So, but yeah, it's all interesting. I'm sure that this goes on a lot more than what people talk about. Because, you know, like you were saying in there, that you try and say, well, I was half asleep and, you know, this, that, and that, you know. So it probably goes on quite a lot more. I know people that have seen lots of things, but they'll tell you what they've seen, but they don't believe it.
Yeah. It's basically what my dad was like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was like, this happened, that was weird, and this place is strange, but I'm a non-believer. Because he obviously, like, also didn't want people to think that he was, like, a weirdo, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people don't. I'm sure I read, was it Coronation Street? I'm sure I read that the set was haunted.
It was, yeah. The Coronation Street set was meant to be very haunted.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I should have asked him. I never asked him what, wasn't it like an old bomb field? Wasn't it like an old bomb site?
It might have been. It might have been in like an old hangar or somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Where it was.
Because I remember.
Film, but.
Because we'd go there quite a lot when he was working, and so there was a pub called The School, I think. And then it was, you'd go up and then the thing was there, and it was basically the set outside. It was like the outside building. But then I was there for work experience when I was a kid, which was really fun. But I would go in through the corner shop, go up the steps, and then walk along all of the street. And then the office I was working in was above the Rovers. There was a hangar as well. And I think most of the stuff would happen in the hangar.
Yeah.
And I think it was built on an old bomb site or something. They've moved now, haven't they? They're somewhere
else. I think they built a new studio or something now, and I think they've all done that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I'd heard that it was haunted, like, so.
Yeah.
But no, my experience is then there from.
He must have done. My only one memory of being there once was my dad was like, oh, I've only got to film one scene. And he was like, and I'm in the background, actually. It was happening in the knicker factory. And he was like, I've just got to be in my office in the background because the next shot someone comes in. So I'm like, I've got to be there, but I'm not really there. And like, do you want to come? And so my brother and I were like, yeah, we'll come. So we went to the set and, you know, They were filming in the street and my dad was fanning around, like just showing off, being a silly dad, I guess. And they were filming in the street and there's a bit. So there's the Rovers here, I guess, and then you've got the street, and then there's the knicker factory that was meant to be opposite. And then if you look down, there was a door that sort of arched like that, and then it was a different colour.
Mm.
And I don't know what it was meant to be on the street, but in the old set, like that was where the green room was, where people would hang out, and that was, you know, where the vending machines were and the main office and all of this other stuff. And we were in there and my dad was like, oh, watch this. And he runs outside and he unhinges that big sort of archy door and like pulls it round. And it was like two-way glass. So one side it looks like a mirror and the other side it was like tinted glass. And he was like doing this silly wave at us, and we were waving back through the glass, and then turns out they were filming in the street. they had to like tell him off because he was wasting their time by getting into frame and waving at us through the window. So that's my only really memory of that place. But it was creepy because they had all of the sets that were sort of stocked there as well. And so if they were doing like a cafe scene, then they get all the stuff out and set the cafe up. But like there was the inside of my dad's house was there. And I was like, I think I've seen that on the telly like once or twice. like never.
Yeah.
When he was married to Alma.
Yeah.
The inside of their house was sort of set up for a scene, but yeah, I am skeptical, but I think that's probably healthy. You don't want to be cynical.
No.
But you don't want to be like.
I've heard enough stories to know that. And I've seen enough things to know that a lot of these things are real. I did a case the other day where someone had seen a goblin that was made of wood and straw. And again, like even saying that, the guy, if you told the guy that saw that a week or 2 weeks before that these things existed, he would have told you, that's just bollocks.
Yeah.
And then he goes and sees it. Mm.
Yeah. See, my husband, I can't remember where we were. Because he thinks I'm an idiot for believing in ghosts. And actually, I think if I hadn't have grown up in that house, I probably would be more cynical. Mm. I think I'm more willing to sort of accept because of the experiences I had. But he's totally like, he laughs at me and, you know, mocks me about it. And then he said that he's a photographer. He'd been on a job somewhere, like East Grinstead Way, and there's an old Flint church with like an ancient graveyard going back a couple of hundred years, probably from like 1516 onwards. And he said that he was there for a job, but he'd been given some time for lunch. So he grabbed a sandwich and just went, because there was a bench. So he sat down like near this church to eat his sandwich. And he said that he saw like, someone walking through the graveyard, someone in a hoodie, he thought he saw. And again, it was in his peripherals. And then he said, and then he looked up and tried to see where they'd gone. And there was no one. He hadn't seen anyone. But I remember being like, oh my God, you saw a ghost. And he was like, don't be an idiot. Obviously not. Like, but even him, he's like, oh, I did see something that was, it was weird. He said out of the corner of his eye. Just some, it was like a hoodie or someone with a hood over their head. And then he sort of clocked them, but didn't really pay much attention. And then when he looked to see, like seconds later, he was entirely by himself. So it does happen.
It does. It happens more often than I think people give it credit for.
Yeah.
Again, going back to that, you know, what you were saying before about the Victorian, you know, the lady that came in your house and she looked, you know, out of place and, you know, and you know, people say, well, you know, it's the typical Victorian sort of look and all that.
Uh-huh.
But again, you know, obviously, if something's in your house, then it's going to be out of place. Well, it doesn't matter what they're wearing. But
yeah,
in general terms, if you're walking down the street and there's a person walking past you that, you know, was killed in a road traffic accident 3 weeks ago and he's dressed like an everyday person now, you're not going to know that's a ghost, you know. But he is a ghost and you walk past and you might even say hello to him. And you know, you go walking down, you look back and he's gone.
Yeah.
And, but that was a ghost that walked past you, but you didn't recognise it as a ghost because he wasn't wearing Victorian clothing. If you
of course.
You know, you'd notice it a bit quicker. So I think they're all around us a lot more than we tend to believe, you know. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome. Sorry I waffled. And I hope that the audio is going to be all right because of my squeaky chair and then the baby.
Hey,
for
a brand new baby, I think she's pretty well there, to be fair.
She is pretty well behaved, but I just try and keep her as fed as possible. I think that's the trick, just keep their tummies full and their nappies dry.
She's got more hair than me.
Well, I was admiring your hair. Was it you that is it you that they said looked like the modern day Henry VIII?
I don't know who said that.
When you were talking on the Hampton Court Palace episode, and I think they said something like, someone said, because when we were talking about Hampton Court Palace, I looked at you and I thought, oh, actually, you look a bit like you could pass for a modern day, obviously, not the 50-year-old bloated guy. The like,
yeah, no, that'll be Dan because he's a bit more rotund than he, so.
Not the gout-ridden.
Yeah, the gout could be, yeah. that's definitely a potential.
But, your Halloween costume could be Henry VIII.
Yeah.
She gave me quite a lot of acid reflux. Apparently, if people are pregnant and the baby has hair, you get terrible heartburn.
Yeah.
And she's But all babies look like frogs, I think.
Oh, yeah.
As much as I love her. Yeah. I mean, because they're all like, they're still like curled up like little gremlin people, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got to straighten out, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Pull my head off.
Sorry again for waffling, and I really hope I don't sound... I actually, this isn't my accent. I get really posh when I'm anxious. I grew up speaking like this, having a Birmingham accent, and then my mum has illusions of grandeur because my dad's from Clapham. Like, he's like a Londoner. He had a London accent, but my mum made me have elocution lessons because she didn't want me growing up talking like Lenny Henry, basically, or Frank Skinner. And so this is a learnt way of speaking. And when I get anxious, I get terribly, terribly posh like this. So I really hope I don't sound like a total knobhead on that. And if I do, I'm going to cringe and die. So
you probably just don't listen back to this episode then.
Oh, bollocks. Okay.
It's definitely not Brummy.
Well, they've gone. No, just for now. It wasn't the right time for us to meet. But there'll be other nights, other stars for us to watch. They'll be back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.